You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
In Sleepy Hollow, old friends have big secrets buried deep. Sci-Fi for Chicks digs them up in this episode, Reaver Madness.
Okay, Battle Secrets is a little vague. What could they be stowing away?
Unfortunately, details of this chamber remain a mystery to me.
I thought you were BFFs with those guys. Washington, Franklin, Adams.
If by BFF you mean Washington was my mentor and Franklin was a harsh taskmaster, then yes, BFFs. My relationship with Jefferson was more complicated.
You telling me you're on the outs with him?
Not at first, no. At first, we were very close.
I could use the benefit of a fresh pair of eyes. Would you oblige me?
It would be an honor, sir. He was my mentor and an inspiration. And I thought a friend. I believed he saw promise in me, but apparently not.
Hey everyone, this is Heather. Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. I am joined by my supernatural podcasting sister in crime. See, I'm going to mash up our two so they don't mess up again like I almost did yesterday. Alex, hey Alex.
Hey everybody.
I think our rhythm is actually off now because we did over 2 days, 8 hours of podcast recording to catch up on both Sleepy Hollow and Gotham. And now we're back to doing one a day. Feel a little tired. I feel like I need a little more oomph energy in our podcasting.
That's because when we had 8 hours of recording, we knew we had to be upbeat and energetic. And technically, none of us smoked anything or drank anything, but it felt like we did. So now I'm like, I'm missing something. I know what I'm missing. I'm missing the idea that we're going to be at it for the next 4 hours, which we won't.
Yeah, and no, that's we're not. Yeah, it was really crazy. And despite the title of this episode, yes, nothing has been consumed or in any way, shape, or form to help us on our quest. I actually only have water to drink as well.
Yeah.
How boring.
Tea on my end, but it's else. The legal one, so. Oh, well. You know, can be perfect.
So I'm calling this episode Reaver Madness because there was a lot of Reaver Madness in this one. It's actually Sleepy Hollow Season 2, Episode 16, What Lies Beneath. Alex, we only have two more episodes after this.
No, I'm not ready. I am not ready. I don't think I will ever be ready. But you know what else this means? That Hody McCotstadt has only two episodes to get back to Sleepy Hollow.
I don't think he's coming back this season. I'm wondering if he's like on hiatus for till next season.
Heather, you think you're funny.
Sorry.
You are wrong.
Wait, I'm sorry. I'm so glad you're 7 hours in the future because I think you would have hurt me on that one. I really do. I really don't know how he would fit into this story unless he does, you know, kind of a swoop in and save the day with some mystical object that he happens to have acquired on his trek or something. He's coming back.
Let's put it this way. If he is not back in Sleepy Hollow by the end of the season, they better announce that he is contracted for season 3 or else. Because I will riot.
Yeah, he needs to be contracted. But yeah, I think he's moved off to your hashtag shiny happy place to hang out with Jesse and Butch and everything. They're all having a few margaritas.
Yeah, okay. It's a good place to be, so fine.
It is. And we did tweet that they were all in your shiny happy place together, so yeah. I think that's where he's at.
Which, by the way, Mudbar, get yourself Twitter. Come on.
Please do.
Come on. It's so weird to hashtag your name instead of mentioning it. Like, you know, proper people.
No. You've got to know that, you know, you're Hody McCotstadt. Officially, no, not just because you know it anyway.
Yeah,
but come on, we've got Butch is talking to us. You can talk to us. Come on. We miss you. Come on, please get yourself a Twitter account so you can talk to us and Alex can really get all shy and blushing and things like she is with at the Drew Powell. Well, we're crossing our genres here. We're going into our Gotham one.
Anyway.
Speaking of Gotham, we podcast on both of them, and yesterday when we recorded, it's like, well, do we want to do Sleepy Hollow? or Gotham, and we're both like, yeah, let's do Gotham first, because Sleepy Hollow's so good, I want to end on an exciting one, which I'm going to give it is probably because Gotham still has several more episodes to get probably to its finale, and Sleepy is right there. I mean, they're just running for this finale, which I'm hoping is going to be as more explosive, actually, than their mid-season finale, because I think they're really heading to some great stuff.
I cannot even imagine them failing in this one, because every single episode since, you know, the very beginning was stronger than the previous one. And they just kept getting better and better and better and more exciting. And right now, every episode is like I'm having a heart attack because it's so intense and so packed and everything's, you know, so awesome. Even the things that I rant about or that you rant about, they can be easily ignored because everything else is so awesome.
Yeah. And they're not having Hottie there. I mean, we miss him.
We do.
But again, he's got a reason for being gone, and they're packing so much in there that the people that aren't in there, I mean, we only have this small little hint of Katrina at the end. And it was great the way they did that. We'll talk to that in a second. But I didn't miss her in the rest of it, not because I didn't want to see Katrina, which I do. I like her. It was because everything else was just so perfectly. It was like this dance in perfect timing. The steps were perfect. Everything was perfect from head to toe.
Yeah.
The way they were doing it. So much so that I really wish I had a drink so that I could just really enjoy it that much more. That was a really sloppy segue. I had a better one earlier, but then we just went on gushing. Because we're going to start with Jenny and Irving, who Jenny spends a lot of time at the bar. Have you noticed this?
She
every episode.
Hello? You've seen the bartender.
Every episode since Malik, it's like, Jenny at the bar, Jenny at the bar. I'm like, you're my kind of girl. I think it's kind of funny.
Moments with the bartender alone, especially since Hottie is not there to, you know, cockblock her. Hey, if I were her and looking like that, because have you noticed her hair were just like the,
again, she looks beautiful and relaxed and
better than,
and on top of things.
Yeah.
Totally on top of things. And I have to say, whether this is actually our actress, or what the actress thinks the character would do, or the props department. Yeah, she's a brown liquor drinker. She's got herself some scotch or whiskey or something. She's my kind of gal. I need to hang out with her. So she's at the bar, and instead of Hottie coming up and saying hi to her, we have Irving. Your Irving.
Yes, my precious little baby who, I don't know, is probably evil soulless.
Probably.
But I love him. And come on, Orlando Jones outdid himself once again, because every scene he was in was brilliant.
I think they've really given him something to, you know, one of our complaints about the first half of the season was with Irving that it was basically just, we're going to see over and over and over again him signing this contract with Henry.
Yeah.
Laughing in the background as we see that same clip over. We get it. We get it. He signed away his soul. And that was really all he was good for in the first half until we got right there to the mid-season finale. And now I was really hoping that that meant that the second half of the season, he was just going to have a real purpose and a real reason for all this. I'm sorry to say that some of the things that I said to you in one of those podcasts that we recorded last week, those 4 hours of Sleepy Hollow podcast, is coming true, where I'm like, well, he's back. He's alive. Yeah. I don't know if he's good. But when he was talking with Jenny there at the bar and he's asking for that favor that he has to get his wedding ring. Oh yeah. Sappy. I love how he goes for that. The family, the wedding ring thing, you know, maybe,
yeah.
Oh, well, this is my friend and she's a woman and she'll get that, you know, oh, you want your wedding ring. It's such a tie, you know, tie to everything that made your humanity there. When you see this tattoo on his wrist and Jenny notices, but she seemed to go along. I was just inside screaming, inside. Don't be blind, Jenny. Do not just think that he really just needs his wedding ring from the locker. But I was keeping it inside because I do have this faith in the writers that every time I have one of those questions come up, they answer it right away. Mm. And they did with this.
I loved scenes between Frank and Jenny because somehow, I don't know how, I managed to watch those scenes from two different points of view. Because one part of me was watching those scenes and was screaming, like you, and Jenny. Jenny, hello, he is
wake up
to something. Wake up, do something. But the other part of me was watching it from Jenny's perspective, so to speak, where, mm-hmm. you know, Frank, he's alive and he needs a favor. Of course we're going to help him. He's our precious baby. Mm-hmm. We love him. And this contrast between those two approaches, you know, one completely informed who knows what's going on and one mm-hmm. off the show's character made those scenes even better because I managed mm-hmm. to see all the layers and differences in those scenes and how the both actors played it, how it was written. Mm-hmm. And the moment, you know, like you said, when Jenny noticed the tattoo, but like many shows often do, didn't notice it, you know, just glazed over yeah. it and refused. It was as if she just didn't acknowledge it, didn't pay attention enough.
Huh, maybe I never noticed that before. I wonder if he got that when he was a teenager.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. This kind of denial kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But then when she acted on those suspicions that us, you know, we as viewers had because we know he is probably a soulless monster. When she acted
despite what you so want to believe.
Yeah. When she acted on it, when she acted on her suspicions and followed him in, because when he walked into the evidence locker, I was like, Jenny, why are you letting him go in on his own? Were you raised in a barn among wolves?
Is this? Yeah, do you really believe him? Like, you keep watch. I'll go get the stuff.
Yeah,
I'll go get my ring. You just keep watch. No!
It was then when she went after him and she saw everything mm. that she was supposed to see. I cheered. Like my cat yeah. literally looked at me like I was a weird person. Like that's a new thing.
Well, she's a cat. She does it anyway, but yeah.
Still, you know.
Any non-cat owner out there does not know that, but all of us cat people, we know that. Yeah. They looked down.
It was so brilliant. It added
it was.
To this, you know, thrill that I had watching it because yes, Jenny is doing the smart thing. You go, girl.
Yeah. And she's being written well. I mean, actually, I think all the women on this mm-hmm. show are really being written well.
Yeah.
That they're something I have really kind of come to realize is that they're written, yes, as smart women, but not smart women who are oblivious to the fact that there are men out there, not all, but some of those male characters that are going to underestimate them, that are going to think that, you know, the woman's just going to take what they say at face value. Like Frank, there's this good part of Frank that we'll talk about in a second, like why we are now talking to the good part of Frank. But he actually thinks that he's gotten to Jenny and Jenny actually believes him about the ring.
Yeah.
That's, I just want to get my wife's ring. And Jenny was smart enough to know that he's underestimating how smart she is. So it's not this blind smartness, you know, kind of like in, we just finished on Gotham and Crane, no relation or maybe to Ichabod, but Dr. Crane was so over his fear that he forgot that fear keeps him alive and he ends up getting shot dead. Sorry, spoiler alert. If you haven't been watching that episode of Gotham, she's smart enough to know to look, to think, to plan ahead, to be observant, but also I love the fact that she wanted to play it out. I want to see what you're getting. What are you going for? Hellfire Club files? What the hell, Frank? You know, she was using her brains and she's being written smart, but not blindly smart, not just bravado, go in all guns blazing. She's being smart.
Yeah.
Love her.
Hey, she is everything that made me fall in love with Jenny in season one. So, I love the
consistency. Or more, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. In season one, that's the first when I saw her and was like, oh my god, I love her. I love her. Give me more. So, yeah, she's been consistent.
And we've had less of her. That was another criticism about the first half of the season, was we had so much of Hottie, who isn't a title credit character, and we had so little of Jenny, who is a title credit character. And I think this is kind of one of those things showing we needed to get to a certain place in the story for her to start really having that moment to shine, that she needed that time to still be Soldier Jenny. She's not Soldier Jenny anymore, but she's still on top of things.
Yeah.
Love her. We love you. We need to tweet to her and see if she'll reply to how much we love her.
But in the meantime,
come on, Lindy.
Let's talk about Orlando Jones. Cause...
Okay, so we had this moment in one of the last episodes we recorded. Again, I'm sorry, people. We recorded four almost in a row. They all blend in together. Where Frank and his wife go to Katrina to see if his soul is still under Henry's control.
Mm-hmm.
And we commented about how short, how quick that was. It was like they barely even touch and know he's clean. And we're like, what? Come on, he can't be. I know you were happy. You were kind of talking about, see, my sweet little baby he's clean. He's wonderful. I'm like, yeah, I don't think so.
Oh, gosh, no.
And why did it happen so quick? What did you think of the explanation of how he passed Katrina's test and maybe why it happened so fast? Maybe also why we saw all these flashes of Henry, because this rune was from Henry. So maybe there was some kind of connection. So maybe that's why she was flashing to Henry so quick. But what did you think of the explanation of how he passed Kat's test?
I'm kind of torn on this one, because I don't really like the easy way out and magical runes, magical artifacts, any kind of Deus Ex Machina.
You know that's all that Hottie does, right?
Yes, but when you look like Hottie, I'm willing to forgive you everything.
Okay.
Frank Irving needs to be also awesome, and he is too awesome to go the easy way out. Come on, no. You're too smart. You're too awesome for this. Do something smarter than just use a magical rune that we learn about, like, four episodes later. So, on one hand, I really don't like when characters take the easy way out, because it's yet another sign of writers being lazy. But on the other hand, it's one of the symptoms of the evil Frank. I don't know how to call him. Let's go with evil Frank for now. Terrible soulless monster is a little too long. Evil Frank.
Frankenstein? Frankenstein?
No. Don't try to be funny. I already told you you're not. Me and my hottie will sit here in my shiny happy place. And I lost my train of thought. Ah, yes. Evil Frank found this rune that he heard about from a book. I don't know, it's all very confusing, like, I don't know. I know that they needed to somehow avoid Katrina learning about Frank too early on, you know, too early. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, it's all confusing. I don't know. Give me my friend.
I don't know if I like how quickly he found out about the rune. So I'll agree with you on that. It was the last episode where Frank and Henry meet and shake hands.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh my gosh, they're on the same side. And it was before that he had this meeting with Katrina. So sometime before that, is when he found out about this rune so that he could get it, so that he could have it to pass the test. Now, let's not getting into the side effects yet of that. I mean, I'm guessing that maybe his explanation of that, since he rose, he only has flashes of what actually happened to him.
Mm.
So maybe when he is evil Frank, maybe he did know that full 6 weeks,
yeah,
or however long before we actually see him come back. Maybe evil Frank was totally aware of all that, because what we're led to believe basically is up until sometime, I would say shortly before him and Katrina, he was evil Frank.
Yeah.
He was totally evil Frank. So we've got 6+ weeks of him being that, doing evil Frank stuff, plotting, messing around. Maybe went to, since Henry was off sulking in the hotel, the motel,
yeah,
maybe he did go to the old lair and find this. So, I mean, there is theoretically the time, but yeah, when did he hear about this? When did he learn about this? How did he find this one book and know to peel the end papers back? So that's a little, okay, you know, we'll throw that in there to make it work. Now, I like, though, that once that evil Frank does it just for the reason to pass Katrina's test, but then it has the side effect,
yeah,
that the human side of him comes out. This is like anytime somebody is possessed and you have that moment that something that the real them gets to come out. You know, it's kind of like the Darth Vader Anakin moment, you know, where it's that moment when it gets to come out. But he knows that there's a clock ticking on it and he's going to turn bad again. This window, this for him to be Frank Irving and not evil Frank.
Yeah. And I like
closing.
I also like that after, you know, he enjoyed his family time, so to speak. He went about planning. And in a way, I actually like that, his plans weren't about the grand scheme of things, about their fight and, you know, apocalypse, evil, yada, yada, yada. No, it was still about family, to make sure that his wife and daughter have the means to, you know, live a life and escape Sleepy Hollow and all that. I like it when characters who are selfless and, you know, do stuff for the greater good like he did in the past start being selfish because they have a reason, when there is a deadline for him. Because there is a deadline. Frank is on a deadline right now.
Yeah.
And he's doing selfish things instead of telling Abby and Ichabod and Jenny that there is an evil Frank that's going to, you know, run around pretty soon. Nope. He has to take care of his family first. And I like it because it adds yet another layer to him, making him even more awesome. I love him.
And something I think is interesting is if you think about it, most of his family time with his wife and thing might have happened as evil Frank, as a cover.
Yeah.
You know, him dealing with Abby and all that, that was with the cover. We know that it would be that one time with Katrina when she does the thing. So we have Cynthia and Frank and Katrina. That is the one time we know of where he was actually Frank Irving with his wife, because that's when he had the rune. And so we know of that one thing. The thing I think playing along exactly with what you said was when he's pleading with Jenny, when he's saying that when the evil one takes over, he only gets fragments and he has this temporary salvation because of this rune. It gives him clarity and there's the stolen funds and he does this whole thing where he goes, it's reparations because I lost my job. I lost my soul. I lost my family. Usually you're going to end with the most important thing.
Yeah.
His family is actually more important than his own soul. So he is putting Macy and Cynthia
above
everything else. And I think we might see, depending on how quickly he falls, you know, I think the good Frank would actually come out and help our heroes, the whole Scooby gang, once he knows that Cynthia and Macy, who should have nothing whatsoever to do with this, are out and safe. Yeah. And so that's when he does his, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope, to Jenny. Pleading. And that was a great scene.
It was brilliant. And I do wonder how long it's going to take for the room to fade and for evil Frank to take over completely. Because once he does... Here's another question before I go any further. If good Frank only gets fragments from evil Frank, does evil Frank only get fragments from...
Or fragments at all.
Yeah, or anything. Is evil Frank aware that good Frank is getting some, you know, screen time, basically?
Yeah.
Because once...
I mean, is this good doctor, evil doctor in the, you know, that Nightmare in Silver episode of Doctor Who, where they're flipping back and forth? I mean, do they know what's going on with the other one? Or is evil Frank just kind of like taking a siesta?
Yeah. So
not realizing that he's been knocked out.
Once he comes back full time, how pissed is he going to be about good Frank and his actions? That's what I want to know, because that's to add yet another level of drama, because that's what Sleepy Hollow needs, even more drama. But yeah, I can't.
Well, and if that happens, Jenny, Jenny is now squarely in evil Frank's crosshairs, because Jenny will have helped good Frank.
Yeah.
Jenny would know. And depending on how, like you said, how much he goes back, Abby and Crane are off doing their own thing. Jenny is doing this thing here. And as far as Abby and Crane are concerned, that's our friend Frank.
Yeah.
Because he helped with Solomon Kent. And they think he's good Frank again.
Yeah, so...
Even if they're a little tenuous around him, you're thinking, oh, well, we don't want to, you know, lay out all the plans in front of him, but he's on our side. Jenny hasn't told them yet. She hasn't had a chance. So is she going to have a chance to get to them and say, don't trust Frank? He's about to turn evil. And the thing that we have been kind of tiptoeing around, because I'm scared of you, is that he says, come on, it's with good reason. He says that the power of the rune is fading and the other Frank will take over forever.
I don't know why you would be scared.
Of you? With evil Frank being the only one coming? I'm scared. I'm on this side of the Atlantic. And I'm happy because that was a sad, that's going to be a scary moment.
If evil Frank knows what's good for him, he's going to be awesome at being evil. As long as he's awesome at what he does, it's like, you know, like you, like parents say to their kids, or like parents should say to their kids, I don't know, I don't care what you do, as long as you're happy. So as long as he's awesome, I'm good.
Is this the advice that Katrina should have been giving Henry all along? I don't care how evil you are, as long as you're happy doing it. Yeah.
Hey,
okay.
This is how I was raised. It doesn't matter what I do, as long as I'm happy. Which means that I can be a sarcastic bitch and make my parents proud because I'm happy.
You said it, not me. I like the fact that we have seen in just recent episodes Henry having this moment where we thought the good in him, Jeremy, was coming back, was coming out. And then he said, no, I am bad. I like being bad. I'm bad to the bone. I am the wolf. Forget you. And now we have this, because this is something we've talked about too in Sleepy Hollow, how they do these referential things, these mirror images. Now we have Frank, who's in that same basic dilemma. There's the good Frank. And then there's the Henry Frank, the evil Frank. And will good Frank disappear forever, like we've been kind of led to believe Jeremy is? Or will he be able to be redeemed? Will he be Anakin and come back? And
well, I think that that depends on how they play evil Frank. Because if evil Frank is a part of Frank Prime, like he's a part of the original Frank, just, you know, all the evil brought out to the surface. to create this
I like
one.
Frank Prime.
Yeah, okay. Frank Prime. Okay. All the evil brought out to the surface and, you know, creating this soulless monster. Then I think it would be a waste if the writers didn't actually put Evil Frank on the redemption path. It would, because we know that there is good in Frank. But if Evil Frank is a completely different consciousness, like a demon possessing Frank's body now that his soul departed, right? Then I don't think they're going to go with a redemption arc instead of destroying or exorcising the demon, the evil from Frank's body, allowing Frank Prime to resurface again. Because with Henry, with Jeremy, it was never about, at least from my perspective, Henry has this problem of two wolves, and whichever you feed is the stronger one, right? And Henry has been feeding the evil bad wolf for years and years and even centuries. So that's slightly more difficult to redeem him than it would be with Frank Prime. So
yeah, it's harder to teach a dog that's been trained that way. To get him back
we'll
to the good.
We'll see. I have every faith in the writers of this particular show. Not so much with others, but this show is good.
Faith in the writers, yeah. One thing I noticed that's really interesting, I usually don't watch the opening credits because I would see them over and over again, and then the Sleepy Hollow music gets stuck in my head and I find myself humming it all day long. I really do. But when I was watching this, I did watch the credits. The only people that look directly into the camera are John Noble, Henry, and Orlando Jones, Irving. Huh. They're the only ones that look directly into the camera. Katrina looks to the side and down. And then we have Tom, Nicole, and Lindy all looking to the side but up. And I didn't know if that was any kind of intentional clues at all. I don't know. I'm probably just reading more into it, but it just struck me.
Let's go with intentional.
I'm going to go with intentional because they're looking, when they look directly into the camera, and then I was like, okay, well, how's everybody else looking? And Katrina's looking to the side and down, and everybody else is looking to the side but up. And I'm like, interesting. Just a little thing from the open. Speaking of openings, another thing we always comment on, this is going to be a long episode, I can already tell you, because we're at 30 minutes in, and all we've talked about is Frank and Jenny and the disappearing hottie. Usually we talk about in the opening how we like that they always start with that little Ichabod funny, but it's usually not a short one. It's like, you know, the House Hunters Revolutionary Edition. That was actually several minutes long. This was a different start in that we actually start with the reason for the story starting. We see these workers going down into this tunnel and getting pulled down into this, you know, underground vault. And then we have the quick little funny. So we're setting up what the story is. We're setting up the peril, but we still got to go do this quick little funny with Ichabod and Abby. And, I have to say, I did love that. You know, we're walking on that battleship and him.
Instagram.
Looking all. I love him just having this look on his face of assurance. And is it possible that I'm fully assimilated? Aren't I wonderful? And then he sees them doing the selfie and Abby just goes, like I do with you. And go. And then instantly we have that Instagram. I love that moment.
I and couldn't. Go. Help it. I laughed so hard because even though the only thing Abby said was and go, like, yeah, when I heard that, I was
like, I do to you.
Huh, have you been taking notes from Heather? Because this sounds familiar.
So then in this situation, I'm the Abby and you're the Ichabod?
Possibly. Possibly. But I do not look good in skinny jeans. Anyway. Back to the topic. I could hear Abby thinking, and in 3, 2, one and go. Mm-hmm. Like, they've been together for so long now. And they've mm-hmm. spent so much time together. They understand, once again, this episode, they are back to understanding each other without words. Mm-hmm. More on that later. But she saw Ichabod get this look. And she didn't need to hear anything more, see anything more. She knew what was coming. And go.
And yeah. he went. She knows him better than he knows himself.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, the scripted funny, like every other episode, but it was at the same time so insightful after the tribulations that they had in previous episodes. They're back together, stronger than ever. They're good. And I missed that. And I loved it. And I just want to, you know, watch them be funny.
Well, I'm glad that you saw the little funny there, too, with and go. She calls me on that so many times. Why do I have to start? And go. So we get right into the peril of the story, seeing these three guys go down and get pulled down. And we thought, what was it called again? The Fenestella, we find out later, which, again, we find out about the Fenestella because of Grace's journal. Yay! Grace, she's still being pulled in. So Abby's connection there is so good. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what they do find and the fact that... Okay, my little mini rant.
Go.
Really, they come around the back way through the tunnels to get there? Okay, I get that. Maybe everybody else doesn't know that. But the way the workers got down there... The equipment's still all there. Everything's there. Nobody is around at all. So nobody has gone down from the fire department, from anything like that, and found what these workers found actually pretty easily. Yeah, that was a little unbelievable.
Yeah.
But then I forgot about it and just went on with it.
Here's the thing. I prefer to think about it the way they solved it on Buffy, the Vampire Slayer. Mm-hmm. Sleepy Hollow is a hellmouth, which basically, you know, it's a center of everything bad, everything evil happens, and people who actually live there, like Calvin, the new hottie that we appreciate your business, thank you very much.
Sharif Atkins, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh my, Sharif.
Like Calvin says, he grew up in Sleepy Hollow. This is not a normal town. And yeah. The way Hellmouth worked in Buffy was that people knew that it wasn't a regular town, but the magic that was coming off Hellmouth and everything that happened around it made them not think about it. Like, you know, vampires, werewolves, demons, gods, magic, everything. When they faced it, they refused to acknowledge it at all. Like, the amount of, you know, animal attacks was through the roof. But nobody actually said the vampire word. And I think the similar thing is with Sleepy Hollow. When you live in a center of supernatural and apocalypse and everything that's bad that's happening around, you just don't acknowledge it. Because if you put your fingers in your ears and hum really loudly, the problems will go away.
Yes, that works so well. So well. So we'll just... Okay. But I still think the authorities would have at least been somewhere down there and they would have had to avoid them. But yeah, that just throws more stuff into the tunnels that they have to avoid. I do like Ichabod's quote about, I was the one buried alive, you know, when she's talking about really tired of heading down in small, dark places. That was very nice. So they go down into the rabbit hole. Really? Really? You're not that prepared. A gun and a crossbow. I don't know that I would go down in there knowing everything that is down there.
Hey.
And they get attacked by the Reavers.
Yeah. And they run away, which is a good instinct to have once you're being charged by monsters.
Run away!
Run.
Learn something from Monty Python. Run away! Run away! And they are saved by our new hottie, Calvin. Nothing comes between me and my Calvin.
Not even Reavers. Look at you trying to be funny. Not even Reavers. But I like...
You're laughing. See? I am funny.
I might be indulging you. But let's move on. I actually liked that they had to face somebody. Because they've been at it for so long that they know how to avoid, you know, the law enforcement, the other authorities. Just Abby is taking the case and she's dictating how things go. But there you have this journalist, you know, who doesn't want to go away because his brother is down there possibly being eaten by monsters. So they have this obstacle that they can't really, you know, put aside, ignore, and it will go away because he does not want to go away. And we like it.
No.
We appreciate hotties that don't go away, Hottie McHotstart.
Very much. Very much so. I love how Abby also, you know, when Ichabod is not happy about this, with this limited access to our investigation, and then she comes back with, by the way, it was you guys that put freedom of press in the Constitution, which would have been actually after he was already underground. But I like her giving him, you know, some sass there and him saying how we didn't predict the 24-hour news cycle. We didn't either, by the way, Ichabod. That was...
Yeah, that...
We're not that crazy about it either.
That happened all on its own.
Yeah.
But I, once again, enjoy how... the way they work. Because... Ichabod does not question Abby's decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because they might have had their problems, but Abby makes a decision and Ichabod goes with it.
Well, actually, I'm gonna disagree with you a little bit on there. He does question her decision, but he questions her to her face.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
And they come to an agreement. You know, they it's not like earlier... a few episodes ago where they each went off and did their own thing and didn't even think of consulting the other. He's saying, yeah, I don't think it's a good idea. And she's like, look, my gut tells me we can trust him. Of course, your gut also was telling you that Frank is your friend again. But they at least deal with it together and come together. And so they have a little bit of help and they destroy a $7,000 camera. Oh, that just hurts.
It does.
That hurt. But I think Ichabod actually took a little bit of joy in it, you know, doing something to a fellow hottie. It's like, oh, this is valuable to you and you're hot? Well, here.
Let me just
drop it down a hole and destroy it. Yeah. I think there's a small part of him. Because we've talked about that too, how we don't think Ichabod likes being not the only one with all these extra answers. So I think that was a little bit of him.
And by the way, can we just take a moment to think of it? $7,000 camera. Who is this guy?
He is a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, which I have to say, do they always have to pull in that the guy's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist? Does every journalist on every show that they want to have credibility always has to be a Pulitzer Prize winning one? It's not that unheard of to have that good of a camera when you're actually being paid.
$7,000. Can you even imagine how many DVDs and books I could buy with that? And down the hole it went.
Down the hole. Just dropped right down there. Well,
it
hurt.
I could feel physical pain when it dropped. And kinda.
I do have to say that if you're gonna do that, if this is your Reaver thing to do the flash, let's think ahead a little bit more and maybe get one, like a flash that kinda keeps recycling so that you have it to keep using on them because, you know, I'm just thinking you're going to get trapped again by them. You already know that there's all these tunnels and there's all down there. That's like a one-time thing to get you running down there. Maybe get one that you can keep doing. They've done that in other shows before.
Hey, but it kept going once the camera crashed. So I guess we know why it cost $7,000 because it kept going.
Well, but then they did run and they got overrun and suddenly a door opens. And yay, Abby and Crane are saved miraculously at the last moment by a shadowy figure in this dome, which I do have to say that when they were earlier looking at the plans for what the radar found, because we didn't talk about that, how that radar equipment the guys had uncovered that there was this beautiful architectural structure underneath there. And you look at that and I'm like, yeah, that's very Jeffersonian. Cause had all the hallmarks of his architecture. Yes. Okay. I'm a Revolutionary War person. I love that kind of history. I recognize that. We are suddenly miraculously saved by Thomas Jefferson, TJ, our bud. Yo, Mr. TJ. TJ.
Yeah.
She's laughing at that. And I'm like, no, actually, that's what us Americans do. John Paul II, JP2,
yeah.
TJ.
I am well aware of your predisposition to shorten everything to initials. And I still laugh at that. But TJ. Seriously.
TJ.
Fine, but they are saved by the spirit of TJ. I can't say it with a straight face.
Well, okay, then, but you can say Jefferson. I love how at first he's like, it can't be. Oh my gosh, my friend is back. Because he's had his lamentations earlier on about, oh, we were friends and he was my mentor and I was so looking forward to it. And then there was a sudden break, which, okay, well, going back to, jumping back again. Us? No? Jumping back and forth in a story? Never. He says, well, if you mean that he was my mentor and a harsh taskmaster, then yes, we were BFFs. And they broke off because I guess you could say Jefferson unfriended me.
That was brilliant.
That was a great moment. So if he's been unfriended, he's been, I guess, refriended. Do you refriend? Is that what it is? Friended again? By the hologram. So we're looking at a hologram as he's passing his hand through.
Yes. It was like, please stop doing that.
Stop it.
I loved it because it was so hilarious. And they managed to make it hilarious despite the fact that it was a serious scene. And plus, I really enjoyed how Ichabod acted differently towards Jefferson, because here was a guy from his time, right? So old etiquette applies, and Abby was looking at him as he bowed, and everything was like, okay, and we're back in time.
Well, what I think is interesting is until those first few moments especially, but then even when he comes to, when he doesn't know that he's a spirit yet, and then you have that kind of disbelieving part, and then he understands that he's this, as they call it, a witchcraft-generated spirit of a man who died 200 years ago. It's not a picture of Jefferson. It's not like pre-programmed, where it comes out and says, Ichabod Crane, here is all the information you need, you must, and then the recording ends. It's actually the spirit of him interacting. You see Crane, because this is really the first time that he's had a person that he looked up to from his time right in front of him. Katrina was a peer. Abraham is a peer. He's remembering all these other things. But Jefferson was a mentor. He was a friend and a mentor and somebody he looked up to. And, I mean, did you know, he was fangirling there a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Ichabod is just like, it's Jefferson! he was really excited, and to see him not be the top dog, for him to be, it's Jefferson. It was really a good side to see of Crane, him actually being shocked like that. What did you think about that whole pretense of the coven there coming together and creating this Fenestella to protect this, you know, the Fenestella here, in case you haven't seen or you forget, is supposed to have all of this information that is going to help the witnesses in their quest. And they knew way back then that Ichabod was one of the witnesses, but we had to wait for the second witness, even though they didn't think it would take 200 years. So now they're there together and all this information is there and the spirit of Jefferson is there to help guide them with all this information, and the witches helped him be able to do this. Oh, I can't wait to see this because you should see her face. This will be interesting.
Yeah, this is but, when you...
Oh, wait, one real quick comment. Something you were saying, like the humor, but also the seriousness. I do want to commend Steven Weber, the actor playing Jefferson, because he's really good at that. He's good at funny and he's really good at serious. And it was, I like him as Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
And go.
And, oh, I will go. Because mm-hmm. you're trying to tell me that they built this great source of knowledge that Ichabod could use. And after he disappeared, got buried, died, or whatever, nobody among those people who were aware of the Fenestella didn't write it down somewhere. Didn't, I don't know, create a magical messenger who would tell Ichabod or find Ichabod when the other witness showed up. They didn't have a failsafe to let the witnesses know, hey, we have mystical internet for you right here, yeah. Underground. Is the I don't know, Fight Apocalypse Club full of idiots who don't have backup plans for backup plans? Come on. Nobody thought that there would be a moment. At some point, Ichabod disappeared from their radar. And he was a witness. And none of them figured, maybe we should have some kind of a failsafe in case witnesses show up when we are all dead. Come on.
Well, I mean, I think they did kind of realize it was going to take a while, because they do comment about how he's you know, outlived, it seems we've both outlived our expectations and Adam's. By the way, that is a historical little wink, that one that you would know about. But when Jefferson and Adams died on the same day, July 4th, 1826, 50 years to the day after the Declaration was signed, and when Adams died, he said his final words were, "Jefferson lives." But Jefferson had died a few hours earlier, actually. So that was a fun little historical nod I like there. She's laughing. This is one of my favorite periods of history is Revolution. So I love these little things. I know, it's amazing, isn't it? I don't know if maybe there was something else that was supposed to lead them to it. If, cause he did say that Abby was chosen centuries before. So if there was something that was supposed to be with Grace's journal that was supposed to be passed down, if they had things that ended up getting demolished. But yeah, I'm like, maybe Ichabod should have been buried closer to it. You know, to the Fenestella, you know, so when he woke up, he was there.
Yeah.
You know, I there were some holes there. Yeah. I'll admit to that.
So that was my biggest problem with the mystical internet. Because, yeah, thanks for giving us this new database and resource to use, and we're going to blow it up.
Yeah. Well, and they did say that no interference was allowed until the second witness appeared. So, but they've had a season and a half now for them to have some sort of sign to appear. Basically. So did we miss a sign? So, I mean, I can understand if until the second witness appeared, there was nothing. Because, you know,
but
you're waiting.
Season and a half of at least some signs.
Yes, season and a half.
That there's this thing you can find.
Yeah. I like how Jefferson and Crane play together, even in our little flashbacks. I think it's funny that Crane was actually helping Thomas Jefferson draft the Declaration of Independence. That is awesome. How he even said a Declaration of Independence, no, the Declaration. I thought that was such a great little funny. But him pushing aside, I'm instantly thinking of Harry Potter in the Order of the Phoenix with Dumbledore trying to keep his distance from Harry because, you know, trying to protect him and trying to... I'm like, do you people... Yeah. I'll give it to him. This supposedly happened long before Dumbledore and Harry, but come on. That never works. But, I don't know. It just having all that information, having this one folio immaculata that has volumes IDing all the mentors to help guide you. Okay, here's my problem with what they eventually did. It makes total sense. Just like how Irving wants his family safe before he's going to help the Scooby Gang destroy evil.
Yeah.
Family is first. I get that. The choice of saving the actual lives in front of you as opposed to having all this information.
Bigger picture, yeah.
Could he not have grabbed that folio? Or can we have a few minutes and take some pictures? I mean, you got your phone. You've got this technology now. Can't you do something? Can we just get a list? Can I get the index of who the mentors are? You know, click little snap and take it with me. Did you have to destroy everything right at that second?
I kept wondering, why didn't they at least, you know, grab several of those scrolls that were IDing the mentors and just stuff it in their pockets or a bag or something? They had to go back up and down to bring the bomb or something. And at no point in time did they think, let's grab at least some stuff. I get it that it's not the USB drive that is tiny and you can put in your pocket and carry out terabytes of data. But still, you know, a fist full of scrolls is better than, you know, a bomb that goes off.
Well, and like I said, what is the urgency in destroying it right then? I mean, I understand. More people could find this. Do you got a day? Can you get the guys out and do some explosion somewhere over there and then just kind of, you know, like to let everybody think that's what happened and you guys just quickly stay down there with TJ?
Yeah.
And you know how to get by the Reavers now.
Not only that, they don't have infinite numbers of Reavers coming in. They have a squad or a unit, however many soldiers that is. I have no idea. But it's a number. It's going to end. And with each trip, they kill some of them. They killed a lot of them during those two trips that they took, right? So why not just, you know, kill the river?
Well, and they have that, they have the door on one side that kept the Reavers out of one side, and they had that gate that dropped down from the other. It's like, come on, why do we have to destroy this now? Now, if we go to the other side, We either save the guys and destroy the Reavers and the knowledge, or we don't save the guys. Do we sacrifice those two guys for all this knowledge, this infinite knowledge? Did they make the right choice? Did they choose wisely?
I mean, I'm looking at it from the perspective of the characters. And I don't think they would be able to not save them, like stop themselves from saving the guys.
Right.
Because what's the point of stopping the apocalypse if you don't save the lives that you can save?
Yeah, saving the innocents there.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is the biggest problem. It's not a problem, but this is the biggest difference between heroes and villains. For heroes, every life matters. Because the moment it stops to matter, you stop being a hero. It's the villains and anti-heroes that, for them, end justifies the means. But neither Abby nor Ichabod are anti-heroes. Like, they are true, you know, God-honest heroes. So they cannot give up on any life. Because it's not in their DNA, basically. Which is refreshing. Because we need more... I'm over anti-heroes and, you know, that kind of characters. So I enjoy how pure and good they are. So yeah, I would be, I might be a sarcastic bitch, but I would be disappointed if they sacrificed those two guys. I would.
That's the second time you've mentioned that in this podcast. So I'm going to take you at your word on that one.
Yeah.
On what you are. I agree with that. So that made total sense. The need to destroy it right then and there and not try and glean any knowledge from it, not even open up a scroll and quickly read it.
They could have played it better, but I get why they needed to destroy it.
Now, it did give a nice moment there when he does go back down and he's reasoning with Thomas Jefferson and, you know, how he says, I wanted to give you all this and now you want to destroy it. And then you see Jefferson's witchcraft-induced soul spirit right there talking about how the price he paid was his friendship. I like that he ends it with giving Crane a true mentor moment, I think, of that passing the baton. Jefferson is no longer the mentor. He has told him, okay, I got this. I'll destroy it. You're right. You've got to save the men. You know, you were a founding father too. And that moment where Crane kind of has this validation and kind of has his place from back then, and the mentors passed the baton over to him. I thought that was a really great moment. Of course, countered with his Ichabod being assimilated into modern day by saying, but I suppose we have the internet, so we're just going to Google everything. Yeah. Everything is out there and we'll figure it out.
It was a good episode. I liked the stakes. I liked how they played it, even though there were several problem points, so to speak.
I think most of the problem points were ones that I realized more after the fact. The only one I saw during it, I did write, couldn't he take a book or two? I did think that right when we're in this. I can't grab a couple on the way out. I mean, I don't think they're all holograms, you know, or spirit-induced things. I think they're all real books and such. Yeah. You know, I think it's just Jefferson that's not really there. So couldn't you have grabbed a couple? But at least, you know, at least during the show, it was a really good and satisfying episode with those little hitches. They did, of course, blow up the author of the Declaration of Independence.
Hey.
Truth be told, he insisted. So let's finish up with two things. Number one, I want to finish up with a little bit on our new, oh my Sharif, our new hottie there. He listened. Did you notice that? Abby said, okay, limited access. You do what we say, when we say, no questions asked, and you can be around. And he did. He didn't come down and try and save them. He didn't try and, you know, rescue the day. He did what he said he would do. And then he's, you know, trust me, I never reveal my sources. You know, is he on their side? Do we have another member of the Scooby Gang? Are we going to see him again?
I don't know if we're going to see him again, but at the same time, I don't think he's going to become another member of the Scooby Gang the way Hottie McCotsart became a part of the Scooby Gang. But I do think that if they were to bring him back, it would be either as a source of information or as a way to control the story. If they were to, you know, cover up something. I think it would be wise to bring him in and tell him the really scary parts that people shouldn't know because it's going to induce panic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm pretty confident that they would be able to convince him that this is something people shouldn't know just yet. But hey, once we have it in hand and the 7 years of strife end, you have an exclusive.
There you go. I'm kind of looking at it. First, I was like, don't tell me that we're pairing everybody up again. We're making it equals. He and Abby did have a lot of good play, which I'm going to attribute both to the fact that they're both really great actors that know how to play those subtle looks, those subtle moments.
I don't know how to tell you this, but Sharif Adkins has chemistry with everybody.
Well, yes, I know that. I remember all the way back in ER when he was Dr. Gallant, and he was so gallant. I just couldn't understand why she didn't pick him, and her character name just totally blanked out of my mind. Parminder Nagra was the actress, but yeah. her character name just totally blanked out. I was like, pick him! He's awesome! But the way they were playing it was very that. It reminded me a lot of how they were playing Hottie and Abby when Hottie first came in. And now Hottie is, of course, jealous of Jenny. And I'm like, okay, are you doing this again? Are we trying to pair people up? Are we giving them options? What's going on here? Can he just be another member of their army? I think this is the Scooby army, because we keep having people that kind of come to their side and then go away, but they can't totally go away, like Corbin's son, and then him, and the Frankenstein monster. I think we're kind of developing people outside of our core that know. Even Cynthia and Macy are part of that. We're people that know, but they're not involved, but they're part of it being not them being alone. You know, it isn't just you guys against every demon in the world. We're getting this, slowly getting this army out there. I hope we see him again, because I did like how he interacted. I think we got just enough of him, but not enough for me to think that it is a tease for him to come back. I actually think we'll see him before we'll see Hottie.
The sacrifices I make as I watch this show. Just fine. I suppose I will be okay with that. He can come back.
As long as Hottie comes back, he can keep having a margarita in the shiny happy place. And Calvin can stay.
Calvin can stay.
For a while as well. Calvin can stay. Yeah. I like him. So we end the episode with a sneak peek of Katrina. And I'm going to tell you that not because that this ending was not worthwhile. When we were doing who do we want to talk about? We totally forgot about the scene because everything else was so big and explosive and so well integrated. And as we're talking, I was like, oh, Katrina. Oh, we can't not talk about this. We have Katrina popping up at the end, having a little nappy. And Henry's by her side with dead roses that have thorns. And, you know, if you still seek to harm me, no, I killed Moloch for you, mother, for our kind. It's time for us to begin our world. And then she wakes from this dream. Oh, thank God. It was just a dream.
Nope.
And yet there's blood in the water when she washes her hand. And there's roses sitting on the chair next to her bed. Creepy.
Awesome. You know what it felt like? It felt like an after-credit scene in Marvel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's what it felt like. It was this...
That little teaser thing that you get, the bonus for... Those of you that stayed to watch the credits, guess what you're going to find out? Yeah.
Exactly. Definitely. So this is what it felt like. And It did its job, really. Because, let's face it, we both are pumped for the next episode. Because it's going to rock, and it's going to be Katrina embracing the everything. Because I don't want to say evil, because I doubt she's going to go evil completely. But yeah, the dark side. It's going to be amazing.
Because she's already had that, you know, we've already seen that glimpse.
Yeah.
When she was battling Solomon Kent, and her eyes did go white, like his did when he was performing some dark magic. So we've seen it in here, and any good story acknowledges that even the best hero has that dark side. I'm a firm believer in you can't have light if you don't have dark, because you have no idea what light is if you don't have something to contrast it to.
Exactly.
And everybody has that dark side. We will be seeing that and her battling with that. And just those clips, really, it got me so excited, because I think we're going to see, that penultimate and then the finale, those two episodes just really giving us that powerhouse. We've got John D's grimoire that is going to be back in play. We're going to have Henry back in full form, because he is now the wolf. He is with his, you know, he's he's embracing his mother.
Mm.
He still doesn't like dad. He still has daddy issues, which, come on, your dad died before you were ever born. He didn't even know about you. Stop blaming him. But that's just me sticking it for Crane. You know, he's on the side of his mother. He's got Irving in his camp. We have the darkness here. I think it is just going to be so fun. And then we're going to have my little history moments where we're going to find out about the Liberty Bell. I guess when that bell rings, it turns people into witches.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll see how. I love how it's like he's the one that actually cracked the Liberty Bell.
Because of course he is. Because he's Ichabod Crane, and he did everything on his own.
How did? Thank goodness he didn't die until, I guess, Yorktown or somewhere in there, so that we could actually win the war. I mean, how would we have won without him? I'm really looking forward to this. I'm really looking forward to these last two episodes, except for the fact that they're the last two episodes. Mm-hmm. So we will be back next week to talk about Sleepy Hollow episode 17 called Awakening. And then after that, we will have Tempest.
Fugit.
Time Flies. It's Latin for time. My Latin sucks. But, you know, Hawaiian. I'm actually not too bad in Hawaiian. Latin, not so good. But we have these last two episodes that we're going to be talking about. We would love to hear what you think about these episodes, so make sure to follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks. We are at 108 plus two followers. I still am so upset that I missed our lost number of followers. But, yeah, we have 110 followers because of our tweeting at Dallas Comic Con fan days. We need a convention with Nicole and Tom and just keep filling in the cast from Sleepy Hollow. I want to see a Sleepy Hollow panel outside of San Diego Comic Con. We need some.
Yeah.
We need some love here. So follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks. Email us sci-fi4chicks@sci-fi4me.com. And of course, call the hotline 573-42-SCI-FI. That's 573-427-2433. 34 and subscribe to us on iTunes or the podcast platform of your choice. Alex, it's a week.
Yeah, I'll see you next week. And then we
talk about Awakening. So do you think Hottie's coming back before the end of the season? I don't think so.
No, probably not. But hope is...
She was about to say, you're probably right, and then she says, I can't say that.
So true. Probably not, but I will hold out for maybe a miracle, one or two. I'm due. I was good and nice to people this week. I deserve it.
It's only Wednesday, people, just so you know. I'm good in the first few days. We will see you next week when we talk about the penultimate episode. And I think after that one, we need to kind of do our predictions about what the finale might do and where we're going to go at the end. This is the Empire Strikes Back season, you know, the middle season. We'll see. So we'll have to see if it's going to be a good ending for our heroes or not. Thank you so much for listening to our extended episode. We will see you next week. Thanks a lot. Bye. Bye-bye.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.